For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Dave Manouk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel. Pleased to be with you on this Saturday morning, the 23rd of October. Gentlemen, good to see you both. Another Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Predators doing battle later on tonight. 6 o'clock puck drop. It will be a very busy IC Saturday between the show, the game, and tonight's post-game show. Can't wait to get it started with you guys.
Absolutely. Looking forward to watching Pekka Rinne between the pipes, PK Subban and Ryan Ellis on the back end. Really excited to watch Victor Arvidsson up front. If you guys haven't noticed, I'm naming players that no longer play for the Predators. I don't think you picked up on that at all. I'm just trying to see if you guys are awake here because I was a little bit late waking up. But obviously, guys, this is a much different Predators team than, you know, the team that was going head-to-head with the Jets for the President's Trophy, right? We're going to see, I think, UC Saros in net tonight. And obviously, you know, some new faces on the back end. Obviously, Yossi and Ekholm are still there. But lots of young players. Phil Tomasino got his first NHL goal the other night. Obviously, the Predators are only 1-3, but this is their first road game of the season. But even if the Predators aren't the Jets' chief rival, it's always a great game when it's a Central Division rivalry. So looking forward to it. And I guess, guys, we're right back in the, you know, part of the season where we're doing two shows every night. So it's awesome. Love it.
Yeah, the first couple months have a lot of Saturday Jets games, and then I think they really peter out after November. It gets a lot of quiet on Saturdays. But for the next couple months, people will certainly get their fill of us on Saturday mornings and Saturday nights and Saturday late nights, as the case may be, Mr. Manouk.
It's a good thing we're not doing Moose post games, because otherwise it would have been very busy after yesterday's home opener. Glad to see Blake had a good time. He's back in the chat. He was there with his family yesterday, and we were emailing back and forth. Sounds like he had a great time at the Moose game. Moose won 1-0.
Back at the lake, though, Drew. Pardon me,
Dave. Well, we will find out. He's in the chat, so you can ask him, is he? But no, it was good to see that he was able to get there, and our Illegal Curve photographer Alexander James went down and took some pictures of his family, which was kind of cool. And so it sounds like they had a great time at the game. So that's real fun. And then Moose won 1-0. It was a good crowd on hand. You know, it's kind of fun. Like, you forget that Moose crowds are so different from Jets crowds, and the noise level, even though there's usually about a third of the amount of people that are going to Moose games, because there's so many kids at the games, the energy level is like 1,000 times more significant. And the kids are just cheering, win or lose it. They're just happy and they're having a good time. So, you know what? It was fun. It was good to be back. And Moose won 1-0 on a goal by Cole Meyer. And, you know, Calvin Pickard, the Winnipegger who played for Grand Rapids, was the difference in the game. It probably could have been 5-0. David Gustafson, for those wondering, wanted a little bit of a prospect report. The 2018 second rounder looked phenomenal. In my mind, he was the best player. Probably Calvin Pickard was the best player on the ice, period. But, like, David Gustafson was the best player on the ice for the Moose. Like, faceoffs, winning them, penalty kill, dangerous opportunities. He was probably the best player. So I know a lot of folks were responding on Twitter about that. And I know this is a Jets show, but I'm just doing a quick recap of last night's Moose game.
That's okay. We wouldn't expect anything different from you, Mr. Manouk. That's why you're the Moose insider. You know, as I'm sure that as impactful as David Gustafson was on the ice, you were just as impactful in the press box.
Well, it's a David thing.
There you go. Good line. Anyways, gentlemen, let's get started talking about the Winnipeg Jets. We mentioned they're in action later tonight to play against the Nashville Predators. You know, it's a big, it's not a big game, but it was an interesting week for the Jets. They obviously went 1-1-1, but I think almost as significant as the on-ice action was the off-ice news, particularly the absence of Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele out of the lineup. We don't yet know Scheifele's status for tonight. Game day skate gets underway in about 25 minutes, so we will bring you the latest from the skate this morning. We know it won't be Blake Wheeler. We don't expect to see Blake Wheeler for a little while, as he is in quarantine in Minnesota still. So it's a depleted Winnipeg Jets lineup. It didn't cost them on Thursday night against the Ducks, but we'll see what happens when they face the Predators tonight. I mean, this is, I guess if you had to have this happen at any point in the season, this is a pretty okay time, because you're not facing a murderer's row of teams this week, and then of course next week when you head back out to California.
Yeah, thanks for that reference, Suge Knight. We're going to talk about Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, obviously, but we should mention, you know, that Scheifele has to produce two negative tests within the span of 24 hours. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press, who's going to jump on with us in about 25 minutes, he wrote that in his column today. So Paul Maurice, as Dave knows, he covered that on illegalcurve.com. Maurice didn't have an update on Scheifele, but if people are wondering, you know, how Scheifele is going to get back in the lineup, that's what he has to do. He has to have two negative COVID tests in the span of 24 hours. We have no idea if he's already had a test or two tests, but I guess based on that, guys, he is an option. But based on what Paul Maurice was saying, I would lean towards he's not playing tonight, but we just don't know, because we have no idea, you know, if the test results have come back for either one or two of that test. So I just wanted to get that in there, that Scheifele could be an option, but that's when he comes back. That'll be after he has two negative tests in the span of 24 hours. I agree with you, Drew. I mean, you know, this game isn't big in the sense that, you know, the Jets aren't going up against the Avalanche, or they're not going up against, you know, a team that, you know, is favored to be a Stanley Cup contender or to win the Stanley Cup. But I mean, the Jets have to keep this going, and they have to get a streak going based on how the road trip went and only getting, you know, the 1 point on the three games. So in that sense, you know, it is a pretty big game. Obviously you're going to have, you know, the national audience early start tonight. Anytime Nashville is in town, guys, and again, we're going to have Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio on, and, you know, we've had him on many times over the years discussing the Jets Predators rivalry. Like, it's still a rivalry, because what you're going to see this year, I mean, everyone's going to beat up on the Coyotes, guys, let's be honest. Like,
well, and the Blackhawks too so far this season.
Which one of you guys had the Blackhawks as a playoff team? That's right.
This guy.
Not looking so good there.
Never listen to this guy.
Guys, we're 2 weeks into the season. By the way, Dave, if we're going to bring up bad predictions, I could write a novella with all my bad predictions over the years on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
So, I thought you were going to mention my Carter Hart for Vezina, you know, was it last year?
Yeah, that wasn't one of your better predictions either. But that's the point of making predictions, so that we can look back and laugh at each other for how terrible some of our predictions were.
I don't know if that was that bad of a prediction, just based on how good of a year he had the previous year, right, in 2019-20. So I still don't think that's a bad pick. He just had a bad season. So, I mean, if you really want to talk about bad picks, Drew, my Todd Richards for Coach of the Year.
When did he get fired, like 5 days later?
He got fired 10 games into the season.
Yeah, I think it was almost, I want to even say it was like 5 games, but that was a pretty bad pick. I felt really confident. I was like 2 or 3 years early. I should have, you know, gone in the torts bandwagon. But I mean, this Nashville team, guys, is obviously in the middle of what David Poile, Preds GM, has called a competitive rebuild. But whatever you want to call it, I mean, this team, I just don't think, as they're constructed now, yeah, they're strong in net. Like, UC Saros is still a really good goalie. He would be a number one goalie on almost every team. But, you know, you got Big Save Dave there as the backup, but it's just a question of depth, right? And we saw who they moved in the offseason. Cody Glass, Winnipegger, former first-round pick of Vegas, he's actually been sent down to the American Hockey League. So if you were thinking if he was going to be playing tonight, Cody Glass is not going to be playing. But, you know, it's kind of a mixture of veterans and rookies. And I was kind of thinking they kind of remind you a little bit of Anaheim, in the sense that you've got, you know, really good goaltending. You've still got a pretty good veteran defense. As long as you have Josi and Ekholm on the ice for over half the game, you know, you're going to be pretty good. I've always liked Dante Fabbro, but I mean, after, you know, guys like Matt Duchene, you know, Ryan Johansson, I mean, it starts to really, you know, thin out down the roster, and they're hoping, you know, Ellie Tolvanen and we mentioned Phil Tomasino, guys like that, they're hoping that they take the next step. But these are young players, guys. So I think it would be a pretty big surprise if the Predators were a playoff team this year.
I would agree with that. What I'm looking for tonight, Dave, is I want to see more of that Connor Dubois-Svechnikov line that really had an impact on Thursday against the Ducks. Same with the Stastny-Copp and Ehlers line. We know that Ehlers is still looking for his first point of the year. Certainly no reason to think that it's going to take much longer. He's been noticeable in every single game for all the right reasons. He leads
the team
in shots on goal. yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe that he's gone through, he's been this impactful and doesn't have a point yet. That's just more of an anomaly than it is anything of a
the Leafs should give him one for alone for the Brendan Dillon pass where Dillon sailed it 10 feet above the net. I mean, I know Gibson made the save, but still, like, Dillon doesn't wait that 2 seconds. That's an automatic, at least an assist for an Ehlers. He's certainly had opportunities. So I thought it was amusing this morning when I was like, is it time to hit the panic button? I'm like, it's four games. It's four games, and the guy's probably been the best forward on the team. So I don't think it's time to start to freak out and worry about Nikolaj Ehlers.
No way, but not by a long shot. But anyways, I mean, I'm expecting, and obviously we'll find out probably toward the course of this morning's show, I'm expecting that the Jets are going to have to run 70 and 11 forwards again.
Oh, just Drew, by... just some breaking news from Jets PR. Jalapeno Cheese also noted it, and I went and looked. Jets PR say no Scheifele, no Wheeler tonight. They're both remaining in the COVID protocols.
Hold on, who's a more reliable source, the Jets or Jalapeno Cheese?
I think jalapeno cheese. I think we should give jalapeno cheese the the.
I mean,
the
I always have jalapeno cheese on my nachos, so I'm going to obviously think that he's a reliable source. So thank you.
he's done a lot for your life.
Big news. Looks like 11 and 7 again then.
Exactly right. So that almost settles that conversation.
And you can get jalapeno and cheese at 7-Eleven.
As he's sponsored by.
But so there you go. So no Wheeler, no Scheifele. They're still in COVID protocol. Obviously, the next time to get out of that, we'll see if Scheifele goes on the road. You know, who knows if he's a, if I guess the Jets could always fly him in there on Tuesday if circumstances allowed for it. But I don't expect that he's going to be on the charter with the players when they head out to Anaheim for next week's games. Anaheim and LA and San Jose.
That'd be correct. I said,
Jalapeno cheese is a she. Let's be.
The pronouns weren't obvious based on the username, obviously.
There you go. Yes. But so, I mean, the Jets really don't have any other option right now of running 11 and 7 continually, unless they're going to try and send, you know, somebody like Nate Beaulieu down to the minors and bring up somebody. But I don't know if that'll even allow them the cap space to make that kind of change. So right now, they're a little bit up against it. There's an adversity. Early in the year, I mean, I would say there was adversity after the first few games in that their performance on the ice wasn't great. Their performance on the ice on Thursday was better, but now you have the adversity of not having a full lineup, and you, because of the salary cap situation, you're going to continue to not have that full lineup, at least tonight, and I would guess maybe Tuesday, but we'll obviously find out about that as the week unfolds.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, let's be honest, the Jets should have two wins. Like, we don't have to, you know, go back and you know, put Jets fans through that torturous finish to the game in St. Paul. But, you know, the Jets should have two of four wins. And then I don't think we're as panicked. I mean, I think it's just the way the game ended that had a lot of Jets fans upset that the Jets were coming back home with no victories. So, yeah, I mean, this Predators team, guys, like we talked about, I mean, even though they're full of, you know, younger players, and this is not a Predators team that you expect to go far in the playoffs or even make the playoffs, you want to keep this going, and you want to win another game. And we talked about it on the Thursday night show. I mean, if you look at the rest of the schedule for the Jets for the rest of the month, no back-to-backs, and obviously you're going to go back on the road, but, you know, these are winnable games here, especially next week when you go play LA, San Jose, and Anaheim. San Jose is undefeated right now. They won again, you know, yesterday, but I mean, the Jets know.
Did somebody throw a jersey on the ice in Toronto yesterday?
Yes.
I love it.
Toronto, Drew, that happens every year. You shouldn't be surprised about that.
Oh, like, I saw that. I'm like, is this an old clip, or am I watching something that just happened? God bless the Leafs fans.
Yeah, the funniest thing, I mean, you know, we've been watching hockey our whole lives, you know, not to mention the fact we've been doing this show for, it seems like, 30 years now. But, you know, you see that every year, and everything that anytime I see that, I always wonder, like, is that someone, did that guy buy that jersey? Like, how new is that jersey? Because a pro jersey is like, it's over $200, and if it has lettering on it, then it's, you know, closer to $350, right? So I always think about that when someone throws a jersey on the ice. I'm thinking, like, you bought that jersey, or someone bought that jersey for you, and you're just throwing it away. So I hate that. I don't like when people do that. I think it's ridiculous, but I really don't care. But getting back to the Predators Jets game tonight, I mean, I think this is one of those games where you are going to see a little bit more of a low scoring game. The Preds have only scored 8 goals in 4 games, guys. Like, this Predators team knows that if they're going to win, they can really only allow 2 or 3 goals. So, I mean, if the Jets are able to open up this game, and basically if the Jets score three goals, this game is going to be a Jets victory, because the Preds, I didn't mention Philip Forsberg earlier, Drew. He's obviously, you know, on that top line as well. But aside from Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne, you know, you'd throw in a guy like, you know, Luke Cunnan. I think he's a pretty underrated player. Actually, Cunnan plays power play and penalty kill. Cunnan's a wild draft pick for those who follow the draft. But, you know, Eli Tolvanen, you know, Phil Tomasino, you know, those types of players, Yakov Trenin, Dave knows him very well from the American Hockey League. I mean, there's going to be a lot of new faces. I think there's going to be a lot of people at Canada Life Center that are looking at that Predators lineup and they're saying, you know, where's Scotty Hartnell? Where's, you know, where are some of the players that I was familiar with seeing a couple of years ago?
And the problem, I would say, from the Predators' perspective, Dave, is that, you know, their best scorers are not consistent. There's so much inconsistency in the games of Ryan Johansson. I mean, Matt Duchesne is inconsistent. When he wants to play, then he's worth his contract. But more often than not, he's just not noticeable enough. They are a little dangerous in that sense, that if they ever, you know, if their best players decide to flip that switch on a night, then they can, you know, then they can get some offensive jump. But certainly to start this year, they have not had any offensive jump. And that's why I think from the Jets' perspective, and we've talked about this really throughout the first number of games this year, the details need to be right in the Jets game tonight. They need to just prevent the Predators from thinking that they can be an offensive force in tonight's game. And that'll be, they should largely then succeed based on the fact that they have that more skill. But that has been the problem. That has been where it's been. They've been lacking so far sometimes this year, Dave, is that consistency. And I know I've been harping on it, you know, throughout this early parts of the season. The attention to detail needs to be there. It was better on Thursday, particularly in the last two periods. But they need to get that started off right tonight, again, in a situation where they're probably 7D and 11 forwards again.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. And as he, I think, said, the key is that they need to maintain and continue what they did in Anaheim. And look, Anaheim had a ton of shots, right? And Paul Maurice was asked about whether he was comfortable with the volume, right? Because they got, you know, I mean, if you're getting outshot, it means you're not controlling the puck. And with the team, the way the Jets have. Now, absent Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, you know, people can say, lament Blake Wheeler all they want. But the reality is that right now he is on your top line. So if you're missing two-thirds of your top line, yeah, it's, you know, it's not an even playing field generally with most teams. Those are the breaks. That's what you have to deal with. So that's that early season adversity. But there's no question that I can't see Paul Maurice changing up the lines, because I think he gained a little bit of you know, momentum. And you're going to start to see what those guys can do. And Kyle Connor looked like he was putting it on towards the end of the game, obviously with two goals. But and just his effort overall. Nikolaj Ehlers, what's that?
I thought it was three goals.
The Tuke trick. People were loving that. That was actually, like, Ezzy and I were at the game. We're just sitting there, we're just like, why are they throwing? Like, I couldn't figure it out. And then it turned out that, like, I realized, obviously, because you wouldn't have that. First of all, that many people wouldn't be wearing Tukes. It wasn't that cold. We're from Winnipeg, after all. And so I was like, why are people? And then you realize it's a giveaway. And then Kyle Connor had a good line after the game. He said, apparently people didn't like that. So,
the Tukes. It's better than the tomato sauce incident of at the old Jets 1.0 at the older.
Wasn't region. It peanut butter?
I thought it was tomato.
No, it was peanut butter.
Was it peanut butter?
I'm pretty sure it was peanut butter.
Okay. Yeah. Somebody in the chat can remind us if it was peanut butter or if it was tomatoes. You know, it's entirely possible, given Jets 1.0, it was both tomatoes and peanut butter in two separate.
Or maybe it was, Drew, it's funny. It may be that the Moose had a peanut butter incident and that the Jets had a tomato sauce incident.
Just who's ever getting that upset at the Moose games that they're throwing peanut butter?
Well, the people get upset.
Okay.
Well, Drew, are you guys a Jewish family or a Kraft dinner family?
Say that again, Izzy?
Pardon me, not Kraft dinner. Do you guys do Kraft or Jif?
Peanut butter?
Yeah.
We're a Jif family.
Yeah, us too.
Okay. Smooth or crunchy?
Oh, man. We're on a segue here.
Smooth. Yeah, smooth. I mean,
Skippy kills it all.
And Ariel like the crunchy, so we go smooth.
Let's move along. Skippy's the winner at the end of the day.
That used to be my nickname briefly when I was a kid.
Well, it's going to be your nickname from now on, Skippy. So let's go.
Yeah, let's keep going here, Skip.
Alrighty. Anyways, we'll keep going. You know how the segues. That's the best part about the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The random segues into peanut butter conversation. Although I do always enjoy the comments, like, from people who sometimes maybe not be as familiar with us. And they're like,
we were talking about hockey and it was good hockey insight. And then all of a sudden they started talking about peanut butter and we didn't really understand why they were talking about peanut butter. That's the craziness of this show. That's the uniqueness of this show. You never know what it's going to bring you.
By the way, Roger Quinnell and Joe from Winnipeg are saying that it was peanut butter. I'm not sure what you guys are referencing, though. Like, were people just throwing peanut butter on the ice?
Yeah, it was a giveaway. There was like they basically had a giveaway, yeah. And the fans were giving the peanut butter, and so they were pissed, and they were getting, I think they were getting pumped like 5-1 or something like that. And so then everybody started throwing the peanut butter on the ice.
And then ever since then, they realized, geniuses, that you can only do giveaways, at least of food products, after the game. When you're exiting the arena is when you get your food products, not when you're entering the game. That's a good lesson learned based on after the great peanut butter incident of whatever year it was in the 80s or the early 90s, whenever it was. In any event, the Winnipeg Jets, again, they're going to be in action against the Predators tonight. The power play units, this is according to our buddy Murat from yesterday, Connor, Kopp, and Ehlers, Stasny, and Pionk. And then the second power play unit, Dubois, Harkins, Morrissey, Schmidt, and Nash. I mean, you know, it's hard to really criticize. It's really hard to get any insight into these power play units because they're so unique. They're so unexpected that you don't really know what they're going to give you. I do find it a little bit curious that Dubois isn't on that first power play unit, especially given how well he's been playing so far this year. But I guess it's also a function of the different shots, and you don't necessarily want your second power play unit to be, I mean, with all due respect to Jansen Harkins and Riley Nash, I don't think either of them ever expected to be on the second power play unit at this point in the season.
Yeah, and shout out to Pat Kanuga of CBC for letting us know what exact game that was. That's a really good memory. I don't remember that at all. I mean, we were 11 years old. I mean, Drew was 35, but I was 11 years old at the time. But we didn't ever expect, Riley Nash. But let's not forget, guys, like Jansen Harkins put up big numbers in the American Hockey League, and he was a prolific scorer in the Dub, right? So, like, let's not diminish. Like, Harkins has got skill. Obviously, he hasn't put up big offensive numbers at the NHL level, but he also hasn't played that much. So, good for Harkins. I mean, I feel like every time I praise Harkins, I'm stealing Dave M's thunder here. But I mean, the guy has really worked his buns off in the preseason and in the regular season, and he's earned it, right? So, like, when guys like Scheifele and Wheeler, the big power play guns, are out of the lineup, the fact that Harkins is getting, this opportunity, I think, is great for him personally. Because, as you mentioned, Drew, he's never really got this opportunity at the NHL level to play on the second power play. So it's definitely going to be different looks. And, we talked about Ehlers earlier, guys. Like, he has looked dangerous and had really good chances on the power play. So, if the Jets get some power play opportunities, I would expect, Ehlers to be shooting the puck a lot. And I wouldn't be surprised if he scores his first goal of the season. But, we've talked about it. The last few games, the power play has looked a lot better. The penalty kill, has been better, especially, against Anaheim in the home opener. So
after the first goal against. But you're right. I mean, the penalty kill is... The penalty kill, if it doesn't improve, I mean, I think the only team that's worse than them right now on the penalty kill is maybe, was it Ottawa, I think I saw? I have to look back. That there was one team, maybe it was Arizona, actually. There's one team that was like at 38% success rate in terms of penalty, of killing penalties, which
that ain't good.
Is crazy. But I mean, the Jets' penalty kill right now is giving every team they play against life. And that's why I think, obviously they need the wins, but as important as a win would be tonight, a clean sheet on the penalty kill would do wonders for this team and their confidence. Because right now, I think they're, if you go into a game and you expect to give up a power play goal almost every game, you're almost behind the eight ball. You're almost playing at a disadvantage before the game even starts. That's why I think against a team like Nashville, a team that is not prolific offensively, as we talked about, at the outset of the show, that's why I think it's so important that the Jets get a clean sheet when it comes to the penalty kill tonight. That will help immensely in terms of their confidence and knowing that they're maybe getting back on the right track as it pertains to the special teams.
Well, I mean, I think that's
go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say, I think, Drew, the word that you used, which is the right one, it's all about confidence. It's all about making you feel good about your game. And I think, you start to build a little bit of that consistency. Sure, you give up the first power play goal against, for Anaheim, and then you shut it down. And you know, there's good young talent on that Anaheim Ducks team. We, as he went over it, you know, in the last couple of times we've been talking about the Ducks, they've got a lot of good talent. So it's young, it's raw, but it's good, right? So there's opportunity there, and you prevent it a lot. And Nashville, the same. You know, these guys have some talented players, and when you're at a deficit, you know, you're at a disadvantage for a reason. So if you can take advantage of, you know, like I said, build that level of consistency, build that confidence in your game, you know, first of all, it's going to help. But we've talked about it. You know, the Jets have a soft schedule to start. You don't have any back-to-backs till November. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got Connor Hellebuyck has enough time. Like, they're not probably going to play Eric Comrie till maybe one game in the California trip, but most likely not till that back-to-back
That Chicago, New York Islanders back-to-back on that Friday, right. Saturday. And even that's a back-to-back with no travel because both games are here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, you're not gonna play Hellebuyck both games. So the reality is, like, but what I'm just saying is that you can give, and look, Connor Hellebuyck looked like the old Connor Hellebuyck in the last game. Ironically enough, you know, it was all about preventing shots, and you know, he's been used to so much volume. Yeah. And now, you know, he finally gets like a defense that's going to try and prevent shots and control play. And yet his best game comes when he gets, you know, 40 shots against. So it would appear that, look, if he's back to, I mean, look, he's not going to get back to form in one game, but that's what you need. It's Connor Hellebuyck playing the way he did last game. You're going to need your PK. You're right. You need to build that level of confidence and consistency with these guys. So we'll see what happens. And I think that's one of the things you don't want Paul Maurice doing is panicking and blowing things up and changing things around. Like, give these guys some reps. Again, you know, Riley Nash on the power play, I understand the right shot element of it, but it doesn't necessarily make a, you know, he doesn't scream power play. I know he got 15 goals, as he pointed out to me, you know, a few years back, but the reality is that, like, that's not been his most recent, you know, kind of impact at the NHL level. So, we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously they're not going to have Mark Scheifele in tonight, but I think, you know, we'll see also the distribution, right? Like, that to me is the key, is giving the Oilers, like, the second unit that time together. If they have, you know, a minute, if it's evenly distributed, I mean, obviously everyone isn't going to be a minute, or if you score or whatever, but like, it's got to be more, the flow has got to be better. And I understand how, you know, even if you're controlling play, sometimes you can do a shift, you can shift in a guy and shift out. So we'll see what that looks like. But I 100% agree with you. I think Nashville is a very big opportunity for the Jets to work on their special teams and kind of keep it going from what they were able to do against the Ducks.
Yeah, exactly right. And you're playing against a team, as we've said, isn't great offensively. And so the Jets shouldn't be in a position where, you know, Hellebuyck has to face the 40 shots that he faced against Anaheim. I mean, that's not Nashville's game. That's not Nashville's style. That's not their approach. This should be a, you know, for lack of a better term, a get right game where your details get back to the way you want it to be, where you, you know, the defense, you know, because the defense, which was all that was talked about all offseason, is being improved and being able to reduce the amount of time and the reduced amount of effort in their own zone. This should be a game where you're able to see that, you know, tangibly when you face a Predators team that just isn't an offensive dynamo. They don't have that, you know, they don't come at you in waves. They're very structured. That's how they win. They win on structure. They win on making sure their details are correct. So the Jets' details need to be correct to counter what the Predators do, because they're usually well coached. You know, as you said, David Poile referred to the team as going through not a full rebuild, but, you know, almost that retooling on the fly. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. You look at their roster and there's a lot more flaws than I would say there are strengths on that Predators team. But that being said, the Jets still need to match their effort and match their details in order to eventually, you know, in their ideal world, come out as victorious at the end of tonight's contest, Ezzy.
Yeah, I agree with that. And going back to what Dave said about, you know, the special teams, I mean, the best cure for, you know, a struggling, you know, penalty kill is to play the Nashville power play, because the Nashville power play was awful last year and it's not much better this year. And, you know, just looking, you know, our good friends at dailyfaceoff.com, you know, looking at their first power play unit, okay, you'd expect Duchesne, Johansson, and Forsberg to be out there with Josi and Granlund. But you look at their second power play unit, Nick Cousins, Thomas Novak, Luke Cunningham, Ellie Tolvanen, and Matthias Ekholm. I mean, it kind of reminds you a little bit of that Jets second power play. I mean, Nick Cousins is a pretty good player, but he's
except
a guy.
The only difference is the Jets second power play looks that way because of injuries. The Predators second power play looks like this just because that's their roster.
Right, that's right. And there just isn't as much skill. And, you know, we talked about it earlier. I mean, Victor Arvidsson, you know, he's a guy that you'd expect to be out there on the special teams. Obviously, you know, the Predators are a much different looking team. There's a lot of players, a lot of skilled players that, you know, aren't here anymore for the Predators. So, you know, the Jets should be able to, you know, shut down that power play, especially that second power play unit pretty easily. But I agree with what you said earlier, Drew, like, you know, Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene, these guys are still super skilled players. And even if they haven't, like, you know, met their expectations, you know, based on the big contracts that they signed, these are still, you know, top line players. I don't care what anybody says. And Eli Tolvanen's a guy that I think we've been waiting to break out. He had a pretty good season last year for the Predators, but we've been waiting for him to break out for a while. So you obviously aren't going to take them lightly. But yeah, this is absolutely a game the Jets should win. If they play like they did in the second and third periods and they get the goaltending from Hellebuck, you know, this should be a dub.
I would agree with that assessment there, Mr. Ginsburg. Mike McIntyre, the Winnipeg Free Press, is supposed to join us any moment now. So why don't we take a break in the meantime? Hopefully Mike will join us, and he's going to be, I believe he's live at the rink. If he's not, we'll obviously bring you the latest news.
You just dropped him.
There he is, Mike. He's not actually live at the rink. He's live in his living room, but that's even better. We'll have a good connection from the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike McIntyre joins us. Mikey, good morning, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Yeah, not at the rink. I'm actually off today. Coming off the 10-day road trip there, the boss had to give me, you know, it's a union shop, right? They got to give you you got to give you your days off. That being said, I am planning on being at the game tonight. Jay Bell is handling he's doing the heavy lifting for us today.
Who's that?
And he was at the Moose game last night, Mike.
Yeah, Jay's Mr. Hog. Jay was at the home opener as well on Thursday, Moose game last night. So yeah, he's pulling down some long hours these days for sure.
Now, is Marty with him? Is Marty going to come to the game with him today? That's really what the fans of Illegal Curve who've been introduced to Marty before want to know, if Marty Bird is going to be at the game with Jason.
Frankly, I'd rather hear from Marty Bird than from Jay Bell. So I don't know about the policy on parrots in the press box, guys. I'd have to read the fine print there.
Very fair, Mike. Obviously brought you on. You were on the road trip with the Jets the first three games. You were there obviously on Thursday night for the home opener. Are you, after Thursday's game, I mean, you know, every NHL team is going to face adversity at some point, be it injuries, be it scheduling, whatever it might be. The Jets seem to be getting a little dose of adversity with the COVID protocol with Scheifele and Wheeler earlier in the season. You know, after Thursday's game, or, you know, did you get a sense that this Jets team might be, their attention to detail might be improving after, I thought that was really lacking in the first few games in California and then in Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that their performance in the home opener, you know, cured everything that ails them, because I think there's still some things that were concerning. I mean, there were large stretches of that game where a Ducks team that, let's face it, guys, is probably not making the playoffs this year, and they're in a rebuild. But there's no question the Ducks are plucky, and we saw that in the season opener, and then we saw that again in the home opener. Maybe not the most talent, but there's a lot of try to that group, and they should be a fun team to watch. You know, for the Jets, obviously they were pretty badly outshot, but I think there were some encouraging things. First and foremost, you know, Connor Hellebuck, to me, that was the big takeaway from what happened on the ice. He needed that, guys. Like, three straight games where he was not at his best. And we know that they're going to ride Connor Hellebuck really hard here, I think, especially early in the season. You look at how the schedule sets up. You know, there's no back-to-backs for the first month plus here. So I think Connor Hellebuck gets the bulk of the action. And, you know, they need their Vezina finalist, their Vezina winner, to be at his best. And after, you know, maybe an auspicious start the other night, I think it was the second or third shot that goes in there early in the game, he really, really settled down. I thought he looked more confident as the game went on. And hopefully, you know, as I can't remember which player said it after the game the other day, but I think it was Andrew Kopp maybe, that they've seen in the past, that Hellebuck, and that's often the start of a guy that goes on a run. You know, penalty kill, they gave up the power play goal right off the hop, and it was, here we go again. But then they killed off, the rest of the minors they took. So there was some important steps for sure. The Jets have to follow that up, though, with another strong performance tonight, or a stronger, I would say, performance tonight. And if they could do that, then they head back to California, and it almost feels like a bit of a reset, right? If they could get back to 500, not that the first five games didn't happen, but, you'd almost feel like you're back, with a clean slate, albeit one without your captain and your top center, at least for the time being.
So, Mike, now the Jets, after the game tonight, the Jets are going to go back to California. So, do you just get on a plane and then your beach towel and your chair is just still on the beach and near Venice Beach, like it's still there and it's just ready for you to go back to Cali?
So, this is where divide and conquer pays off, guys, because it's actually Jeff Hamilton is on this coming trip for us. So, Jeff will be heading down to sunny California for these next three games. It would have been the case of that for sure. What a weird start to the season, eh? Such a heavy dose of, they're going to finish their season series here with both Anaheim and San Jose, before the season's a month old. It's a strange scheduling, a bit of scheduling there for sure. But yeah, the Jets, maybe it's a good thing they get back on the road here and they can almost kind of try and right the wrong, if you will, of the first three games that didn't obviously go according to plan. And then, of course, they come back after that. And I think it's the season-long seven-game homestand, right? So, there's a lot of runway. I know there was a lot of panic after three games. You look around the league, though, guys, there's a lot of teams that were expected to make noise this year. I'm looking at you, Vegas and Colorado, who were my top two picks, and I think most people's top two picks in the Western Conference. You have to look to the very bottom of the Western Conference standings right now to find those two teams, all of which is to say it's still really, really early. I don't expect Vegas and Colorado to remain where they currently are, but small sample size and not the start that those teams wanted either.
Well, the wins count just the same in San Jose, where they're 4-0 after defeating the Leafs last night. And Edmonton right now looks like an absolute juggernaut. And God help you if you take penalties against the Oilers, just like last year, indeed. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is our guest Saturday morning. You're live with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms.
Yeah, Mike, I wanted to ask you about Evgeny Svechnikov and Jansen Harkins, because obviously, Svechnikov since training camp, a lot of Jets fans and media are, talking about Svechnikov because, he signed originally an AHL deal. And then, of course, right before the season started, regular season started, he signed the NHL deal. But, it looked like, he just fit seamlessly on the line with Pierre-Luc Dubois, his old buddy from the QMJHL. And, Jansen Harkins getting that spot on the third line and then now getting some time on the second power play unit. You mentioned Connor Hellebuck earlier as his performance is a big takeaway, and I agree with you 100%. That was easily his best game of the four games. But what did you see from Svechnikov and Harkins that might make you think that maybe their role will be maybe more elevated than we thought, a couple of games ago?
Yeah, file that one under unexpected development, that four games into the season, Evgeny Svechnikov was in Winnipeg's top six. Who would have had that, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody would have had that because, first of all, you would have been wondering, who's not in the top six? And you wouldn't have banked on two-thirds of your top line in Scheifele and Wheeler obviously being in COVID protocol. But, it's telling that's who got the opportunity. I kind of thought, and I know the Jets, there's a cap situation that is much smarter minds than me are looking at, and it's a tricky thing to navigate right now. So the Jets it would appear they're going to have to play shorthanded here, and we're going to see 11-7 probably for some time. And God help them if they get another minor injury, because they may actually have to literally play shorthanded, not 18 skaters. I thought maybe Cole Perfetti comes right back and gets that chance. and again, I can't necessarily explain all the mechanisms of the cap and whether they could even fit Perfetti right now under the, I don't think they can.
Yeah, no.
They only have $275,000 right, unless they're going to try and send somebody down. I mean, they're, you know, similar to what the situation the Leafs were in, I think it was last Saturday, Mike, where they had to use, they couldn't call up Michael Hutchinson on the emergency recall basis. They had to go with the amateur tryout goaltender. It's just a, it's almost, do you think the NHL maybe erred in not, not necessarily having a taxi squad, but having some sort of exemption for a guy who's waiting to get to test out of COVID protocol?
Absolutely. Especially for guys that are fully vaccinated. I mean, which you know is the overwhelming majority. There's only a handful of players in the NHL. Yeah. It does seem like this was an oversight and I don't know why you wouldn't want to, you know, if everybody's doing the right thing, why do you want to punish teams? This is a little different than the wear and tear of the, you know, the grind of a regular season. So, and again, it's not, I'm not saying this just because it's happening to the Jets. We've, like you said, we've seen it happen now to a number of teams. Sure. And I got to think there's, with every team this happens to, there's going to be a growing chorus of general managers saying, we got to do something about this. But yeah, back to Svechnikov. I mean, there's a lot of intriguing pieces to this player, right? Like this is a guy who was once a very valued commodity when in his draft year, he was seen as a real difference maker. And we know things didn't exactly pan out in Motown. I think a lot of that is injury related for sure. You know, this is a guy who battled some real tough injuries early in his career. And he seems very excited about the fresh start. I actually chatted with him in San Jose last week you know, got a real sense of just how thrilled he is at the opportunity staring him in the face. And this was before the top six opportunity. And I thought he acquitted himself quite nicely the other night on that line. Pierre-Luc Dubois has to me just been the best. You know, him and Kyle Connor have been the two best forwards, I think, for the Jets. I'd throw Andrew Copp in there as well. But Dubois looks like a guy, kind of like everything that was said in the preseason, the fresh start. He looks like a guy who's embraced that for sure. And more than the goals or the points, to me, it's how he's moving out there. Dubois looks fast, like really, really fast. And you notice him every time he's out there. And so to have Svechnikov, who we know they had some chemistry in junior, you know, that's a nice looking line. And you know, the Jets, especially when a guy like Nikolaj Ehlers has yet to even register a point, the Jets and they don't have Scheifele and Wheeler, like they need some other guys to be stepping up. And so Svechnikov, you know, contributes on the score sheet the other night, and they're going to need it again tonight.
Well, Mike, you segue nicely into my question about Nikolaj Ehlers. And do you think it's much ado about Ehlers? Because I mean, at this point, obviously not having any point isn't great, but he's creating, he's looked dynamic. He's had a lot of opportunities. What have you thought about Nikolaj Ehlers point removed in the first four games of the season?
I think he's saving all his points for the Denmark Olympic team. he's trying to pace himself, right? He wants to peak in February this year. No, I mean, I'm not worried about Nikolaj Ehlers. And, you know, I thought the other night he looked at probably his most dangerous. I think he had 10 shot attempts, guys. Mm-hmm. So that was a good sign for sure. And you know, he's going to break out here sooner than later for sure. Was looking back, actually, it dawned on me the other night that, geez, he doesn't go, you know, he used to be seen as a streaky player, I think, early in his career, but he's kind of tossed that label aside. And he's actually become a very consistent performer, I think, in the last few seasons. So I look back and, yeah, he hasn't had a four-game stretch where he was held pointless until early in 2019. So it's been a few years. But yeah, I expect he's going to break out here. Maybe it comes tonight. Maybe it's on the road trip. But, you know, if he wasn't shooting and if he wasn't getting those chances, I'd be a lot more concerned. So, you know, I think this is a guy who we know what he's capable of, and we're going to start to see it register on the score sheet very soon here.
Mike McIntyre, the Winnipeg Free Press, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the Jets and the Predators. 6 o'clock puck drop later on tonight, the Illegal Curve post-game show following the contest. And you can read all of Mike's work in the Winnipeg Free Press and online at winnipegfreepress.com. Mike, you know, we haven't had a chance to speak with you since the road trip, and you know, obviously not an issue, not going to be a factor right now or, you know, for the near future. What did you make of Blake Wheeler penalty killer? Because to me, that was one of the more bizarre coaching decisions by Paul Maurice. You know, certainly this early in the year, it just came out of left field to me for, you know, to play a guy more minutes when you would think at this stage in his career, less minutes would be more beneficial to him.
Yeah, I didn't like it. And for that reason, Drew, strictly because of, you know, call it load management or whatever, Blake Wheeler at 35 should not be leading all Jets forwards in ice time. And yet through two games, he was over 20 minutes a game. And, you know, I found it kind of curious. Paul Maurice and others talked about how the Jets didn't look so fast on that road trip, that we need to get faster. The playing Blake Wheeler, you know, over 20 minutes a game is not going to make you a faster team. Blake Wheeler just doesn't have the wheels, no pun intended, at this stage of his career. I believe Nikolaj Ehlers, who does have the wheels through a couple games, he was eighth among forwards in ice time. So, you know, it was a little curious for sure. And I get that there seems to be this open audition that is going on the penalty kill. You know, you look back, guys, and we hyped, I think, a lot of the moves that were made in the summer and what the Jets did. Maybe one overlooked area was strictly who was going to kill penalties, right? Because we know they lost Thompson, Lewis, and Mason Appleton, who was a very effective penalty killer. And so that's three guys that were staples on the penalty kill last year. And the only pure penalty killer that was brought in was Riley Nash. So you now had three guys going out the door and only one really coming back in. So this search, and we saw it in the preseason with not so great results, and we're seeing it now early in the regular season. And I think maybe, you know, Lowry and Kopp, that's the duo that's been burned the most so far on the penalty kill, which that's supposed to be your most reliable pair. That's your top pair. But yeah, I don't like it. I'd be surprised if it really continues. Ideally, they'll find some other guys that could fill that role. And they got Dominic Toninato back up here. You know, I do wonder, Dave, and you would have watched him closely last night. Like David Gustafson, to me, is a guy that probably should be up here sooner than later. And I hate to single out one guy on the Jets, but to me, you know, at this point, should David Gustafson be here over Christian Vesalainen? Vesalainen's not killing penalties. David Gustafson, we know, can. And I just wonder if that's a move that we see sooner than later. If for nothing else, then you get the penalty kill element with the Gustafson, not to mention the guy's off to another really nice start with the Moose here early in the season, and he's their team's MVP.
Yeah, and one other guy I would throw out there, Mike, and I know you've probably, you know, you've thought of this too, and is Harkins on the penalty kill. Yeah. He is going to be on the second power play unit, but he's a guy that we know has killed penalties, you know, both in the AHL and the NHL, more so obviously, you know, with the Moose, and he was also, you know, one of their top scorers. But Harkins is a guy that I think, you know, I would like to see out there personally. So we'll see if, you know, he gets in there in the next few games. But I wanted to go back to Connor Hellebuyck, and earlier we were talking about, you know, how much he's going to play this year. I think, you know, we all expect him. He might be close to 70 regular season games, depending on, you know, what impact the Olympics have. But what are you expecting to see, you know, in regards to the starts over the next 4 or 5 games? Because I think you'd agree there's a good chance that, well, obviously Hellebuyck's playing tonight against Nashville, but I think there's a good chance that he plays all the games on the California road trip. And the first game that Eric Comrie might get into is one of those back-to-back games, November 4th and 5th against Chicago and the Islanders.
Yeah, so I had looked at one game next week that I thought could make some sense, but I think a lot of it will depend what the Jets do these next two games, and that would be the middle game of that trip in Los Angeles. I kind of thought maybe that's Eric Comrie's game there. But that being said, if the Jets maybe drop the next couple, like, and they're still going in there with a one win, I don't think you see that. I mean, if the Jets beat Nashville tonight and then maybe they go in and start the road trip off with a win, you know, against Anaheim on Tuesday, maybe they feel a little more comfortable. But yeah, it's an issue for sure. And I think it's not so much the idea that they want to ride Connor Hellebuyck so hard. I think it's just, and they would never come out and say this, I just wonder how much confidence they have right now in Erik Comrie. But you're not going to really find out what he can do until you kind of throw him in, right? Like sink or swim. And, you know, it's just at this point, he might not see the water for a while. And yeah, that, you know, Connor Hellebuyck, you know, he told us, of course, that in late August, he got COVID, that it affected his training. He said it took a lot out of him. And we know that the final few weeks ramping up to training camp were not what he normally would have them be. And I do wonder if some of that has kind of lingered here into the preseason and the early start of the year, which, if true, would you think you'd want to find some ways to maybe spell him off a bit and not run him, you know, run him ragged, right? But, you know, the other night was certainly a positive sign. There's still some things about his game, though, that concern me a bit, guys. Like I tweeted the other night that when he's at his best, he plays big and he plays boring. And I don't see him playing big. I mean, maybe a little more the other night, but he hasn't looked big and he hasn't been boring. He's kind of been, there's a lot of motion there. Pucks are flying off him. He's flying everywhere in the crease, and it's just not what we're used to seeing. But maybe the other night will help him kind of settle in here.
Well, Mike, just getting back to the point you made about David Gustin, I agree. He was the best player on the ice for the Moose. Well, he's best forward on the ice, period, in last night's game for Manitoba. And he's Jay Bell, your colleague at the Winnipeg Free Press, had a really good story on him, including some PR from Nelson Nogé, who did a great breakdown.
Nelson Nogé and Associates.
I've got it in the morning papers linked up, and so people should definitely go read Jay's article about David Gustin. I thought that was a really good one and gives some insight into the kind of player he is. And I agree. You know, Paul Maurice often talks about players needing to play more than one role when you come up from the AHL and to be able to do more than one thing. And we know with David Gustin, he certainly can play penalty kill and at 5-on-5. So I agree with you. I think he's a guy who probably should be in the NHL sooner rather than later. But, you know, just looking at the Jets back end, and I'm not one for making grand statements. I'll let you do that, Mike. But I don't want to do that yet because I think it's early in the season. But how do you see the pairings? And specifically, actually, I'm more interested in what you think of the Pionk-Dylan pairing versus the Schmidt and Morrissey pairing.
Yeah, you know, if I had to single out one of the three pairings that maybe, and of course they've been using Nathan Beaulieu now, so it's a little, they're working him into the mix here with the 7D. But to me, yeah, the Pionk-Dylan pairing is the one that maybe, frankly, I've expected a little bit more of than what I've seen so far. And I don't think individually their games have been fine. I've actually liked some things that Brendan Dillon has done. Like he's kind of come as advertised, right? You know, he had a big scrap and he's thrown some big hits. And Neil Pionk, you know, he's still putting up some points here early in the year. You know, so is Josh Morrissey, which is nice to see. Like this is a guy who really struggled last year. And I was looking, I think Josh Morrissey's already like a +6 or something. Like he's off to a really nice start to his season. Schmidt's now registered. He had a multi-point game the other night. But for sure, on the defensive side, like I think they're still trying to find their way. And maybe Dylan and Pionk a little more than Morrissey Schmidt in terms of just some of the chemistry and some of the reads off each other, that sort of thing. So by no means would I blow that up or start moving guys around. But for sure, you know, it's something that I think you'd like to see a little bit more of, because, you know, the Jets still, four games in, some of the same issues that plagued this team in the past, right?
Right.
Too many shots, too many scoring. Like some of those issues are still kind of rearing their ugly heads that we thought were kind of solved. So, you know, it's going to be a work in progress here, I think, still for some time.
Exactly right. The shot suppression, easy for me to say, which everybody thought was going to be, improved, certainly has not been so far this year, not to mention the struggles on the PK. You know, last question on this one, Mike, back to the PK. We talked about sort of the deployment. I look around at the Jets PK and I still find it to be too passive. I look at some of the other PKs they face off against and they're not reckless, but they apply a little more pressure. Do you think the Jets are erring in not maybe adapting their style just a little bit, especially with the new bodies they have on the back end, where maybe that allows them, improved defense maybe allows them a little more aggression on the PK? And would you possibly see that being an avenue the Jets would look to, alter a little bit, depending on if the PK continues to struggle?
So, Drew, it's a great question, and it actually brings me to something I said to my colleague, Jay Bell, in the press box the other night, right after the Jets had given up that first power play goal early in the game, their eighth already through, at that point, which was barely, nine periods of hockey. I agree that they're not nearly aggressive enough. And if nothing else is working, how about this? Why not try Nikolaj Ehlers on the penalty kill? I mean, you want aggression and speed and, potential chaos. And Jay's answer to me was, well, they don't want him potentially stepping in front of a shot or whatever, and that's kind of not his game. And I get it. That isn't his game. But if you're looking to add an element of unpredictability, and if nothing else is working anyways, and you're also looking to maybe get Ehlers a few more minutes. That's been a running storyline for a long time in this town, right? Why isn't Nikolaj Ehlers playing more? Well, throw him on the penalty kill. That'd get him a few more minutes. I don't expect to see that happen, but it does underline the point that you just made, Drew, which is that, at times they seem content. And maybe part of that is just, hey, we got one of the best goalies in the world. He can do his job back there. Of course, one of the best goalies in the world struggled a bit in those first few games, which I think also accounts. I mean, the old saying, your goalie needs to be your best penalty killer. Well, he wasn't. None of them were really. There wasn't any really good penalty killing going on. So that's part of it for sure. But Paul Maurice talked about all these changes to systems that are happening. And you're right. When it comes to the penalty kill, it kind of looks like same old for the Jets so far.
Always a plucky guest. Mike McIntyre knows that the bird is the word. Mike, thanks for joining us. You can read all of Mike's coverage, of course, in the Winnipeg Free Press and online at winnipegfreepress.com.
Mike, we'll be over later for the McIntyre family New York City slideshow.
Very good.
I'll bring the snacks and we'll check out all the family pictures.
Drew, by the way, you were channeling your Ron McLean there, like a little bit. Would be said right at the beginning, and then he'd come back to it with the punny extra. So very well done.
Thank you. I'm going to leave for the rest of the show. I can't better that. So I'm just going to go for the rest of the for the next.
Leaving
hour.
On high note.
Yeah,
David, delusions of grandeur for Drew right here.
Yes. All right.
Mike, remember, like a gremlin, like never feeding a gremlin after midnight. You're never supposed to give Drew compliments. It's kind of a kind of an unwritten rule here at Illegal Curve.
Duly noted.
Thank you, Mike. We'll see you again soon.
Cheers, Mike.
There he goes, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. Let's take our first break. When we come back, more on the Winnipeg Jets and the Nashville Predators. Check in to see if there's anything exciting happening at the game day skate. And we're going to be joined at the bottom of the hour by Justin Bradford in Nashville to talk about the Jets' opponent tonight, the Nashville Predators. Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Stick with us. It is the
Smash the like button.
It is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now here on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. I am your host, Drew Mandel. Dave Manouk is in the top right. Ezra Ginsberg is in the bottom middle. Thanks to Mike McIntyre for joining us. Good morning to everybody who's joining us in the chat room. A reminder, later on tonight, not quite, about maybe 11 hours from now, a little less than 11 hours from now, it'll be the Illegal Curve post-game show. We'll be right right back at it to talk about everything that happens during tonight's Jets and Predators contest. So we'll meet you back here later on tonight. Maybe given that it's a Saturday night, you want to tip a beer back or tip a two beer back, that would be fine with us as well.
What about three beer?
Well, you can do that too, as long as you're going to be safe and you're not driving and, you know, everything else along those lines. Just be safe, but enjoy yourself. That's all I'm saying here, Mr. Ginsburg.
Absolutely. Jets. And speaking of carbohydrates, we're also going to be giving away bagels tonight. Starting with tonight's game, we're going to be giving away, there's going to be a bagel giveaway after each Jets game, not just home games, every single Jets game on the Illegal Curve postgame show. We will be giving away half a dozen bagels from Bagelsmith, Montreal style bagels, our new sponsor. So you're going to want to make sure that you tune in, because we're going to be giving away some bagels. So
we're giving away bagels. We're giving away toques. Dave M has got moose tickets to give away. It's a party. It's a wild and crazy party here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Just keep your pants on, Drew.
My pants are always on. Don't worry about that. That's something you need to be concerned about there, Mr. Ginsburg.
You don't sleep with pants though.
What's that?
You sleep with pants?
No, I don't sleep with pants. That'd be sometimes I've slept in like pajama pants, but not often. That's usually too restrictive.
You get too hot.
Yeah, I get a little warm. You know, big comforter on you. That's It gets to be a little bit much. I think Dave M is frozen. That's what I'm guessing, because he seems to, or he's given up on us. It's one or the other, Ezra. I'm not sure which.
I have no idea which one it is, because I could easily see him giving up on us.
There's no question about it. I wouldn't blame him in the least bit. I want to talk about the Jets' face-off percentage, their face-off winning percentage, Ezzy. There he goes. There goes Dave Minuk. So clearly he is frozen on us. I'm sure he's going to reboot his computer. The Jets in the face-off dot has been a bit of a problem so far this season, Ezzy. They're struggling. They're way down in the lineup, 29th in the NHL at winning percentage in the face-off circle at only 45%. Do you expect that is just a small sample anomaly? Because the Jets have some guys who are pretty good face-off guys on their roster taking draws typically. Or do you think that's going to be a problem that they experience, you know, throughout the majority of the season?
Well, I think just based on, like you talked about the numbers, I mean, that's obviously lower than we thought it was going to be. Adam Lowry is obviously the best face-off guy on the Jets. Mark Scheifele has never been a guy that you expect to be winning 55 to 60% of his face-offs. Like, he's not a Patrice Bergeron, right? So I do expect the face-off percentages to be better, but it's definitely a concern, right? Especially when you're talking about, you know, those late D-zone face-offs. Like, I thought it was a big problem in the Minnesota game. The Jets were really struggling in the face-off circle. So I'm not concerned about it, you know, at a macro level. Nice to see Dave M back in the chat. Pardon me, on the show, not just in the chat.
Yeah, he's been relegated to he's relegated to the chat room.
I was busy writing Joe from Winnipeg. Joe, a comment back about where we're going back and forth on what his thoughts on Mikael Berdan. So I'm sorry that I got so fixated on that. I was so steaming mad at Dirk.
Well, also, Dave, probably streaming the Squid Game isn't helping your internet connection either.
That's true. So. That is true.
But Drew, I mean, the face-off percentage, like, I don't think you're all of a sudden going to see the Jets, you know, become one of the best face-off teams in the league. That's just it's not a strength of theirs. But yeah, I expect Lowry's face-off percentage to be a little bit better. But you know, you're missing Mark Scheifele up the middle, even though he's been, I think, closer to a career 46-47%. I want to say something like that. I'd have to go and check the career faceoff numbers, but I know it's below 50%. But, you know, in those types of situations, if it means that, you know, you have to have a guy like Riley Nash taking, you know, faceoffs in place of Pierre-Luc Dubois, then you got to do that.
Well, so in terms of where they are, you know, now so far this season as compared to their career averages, Paul Stastny, Riley Nash, Andrew Kopp, and Mark Scheifele are all way, way lower in their so far this season as compared to their career face-off percentage, winning percentage. So that's, I mean, and again, it's only four games or you know, at this point. So I wouldn't say that it's necessarily...
Well, for Scheifele, it's two games.
Well, yeah, Scheifele, to your point, though, Scheifele's never been a great face-off guy, and it's been an area that he's always been trying to improve. But, you know, Riley Nash, when they brought him in, I think that was part of, you know, some of the appeal for
him. He's a good
him.
Face-off I mean, guy.
Yeah. Well, typically he is. This year he's only at 38.5%. Now, granted, he's only taken 13 face-offs. So, I mean, you know, it's a small, small sample size. But, you know, it seems certainly to be, you know, more often than not, I would say, after a face-off draw, at least early this season, the Jets have not been in possession of the puck. And, you know, when you don't possess the puck, usually, you know, more likely bad things happen than good things. So I just found that to be something that it's worth paying attention to so far, Dave, to see how the Jets can improve that. Adam Lowry leading the Winnipeg Jets at 50% in the faceoff dot. He's taken the most faceoffs at 58 so far this season. Pierre-Luc Dubois next. He's taken 40 draws and he's won 18 of them. So he's almost at 50%. I mean, when your numbers are that small, they're you know, you're 18 pro, 22 against. So it's pretty close. And then Andrew Kopp below him, he's taken the third most draws, and then Scheifele behind Kopp. But of course, Scheifele's only played in the first two games this season, Dave. Is that something, you know, we talk about David Gustafsson a lot. You know, you watch him, you know, it seems to be another area that he could come up and help the Winnipeg Jets. Now, there's obviously a big difference in taking faceoffs at the AHL level versus the NHL level, but that's just another asset that he potentially brings to the table.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, Drew, because as you were talking about it, all I could think about was I could go on another David Gustafsson rant here because David Gustafsson is excellent at faceoffs.
Are you getting royalties for every time you mention him?
I don't know. At this point, I should. Or, you know, yeah, exactly. But it's an element of his game that he's worked on and that he's developed, and he's very good at winning faceoffs. He was phenomenal. It's funny because I was tweeting about it last night. I said, if you need to win a faceoff, you know, give David Gustafsson a call. And then he won that faceoff right after I tweeted that. And then within that same shift, he wins another one. Like, I think he lost maybe one or two all night long. Like, he's excellent at that. He's excellent at pretty much all facets of the game. And the irony is his offensive game, which he doesn't get a lot of credit for, I think is actually sneakily better than a lot of people would think. So, yeah, I mean, to me, if Christian Vesalainen, and I mean, David Gustafsson, it's all about what your fit is. And David Gustafsson, to me, is either your fourth line center, or he could be a third line winger in that shutdown, sometimes score role that the Jets seem to have created for the third line. And I know Christian Vesalainen is trying. I know Christian Vesalainen is, but it seems like a.
I'm just gonna say, I thought Vesalainen had his best game of the year.
No,
Thursday night he unleashed a couple of shots, and we know that's
I know
his it was best attribute is his shot. But I thought he was most noticeable on Thursday night that he's been so far this season.
Yeah, I know. And he's using his size. And that's the one thing he has to do with that line is he has to use his size to try and, you know, and that's not, you know, a hallmark of Christian Vesalainen's game, but it's an element that the Jets have asked him to incorporate if he's going to be able to make it in the NHL. And as Nate Schmidt told me over the summer, when you come to the NHL and they ask if you can do something, your only answer is yes. Because, you know, can you play right side? Yes. Can you play penalty kill? Yes. Can you play the power play? Yes. So you'll do whatever you
can. Are you excited for a Legal Curve merchandise? Yes.
Yes. So, I mean, I think those are one of the things that, you know, if Christian Vesalainen is asked to change his game, then he's just going to do whatever it is so he can maintain his spot in the NHL. So I can understand that. I just think that in terms of suitability, David Gustafsson is probably more suitable for that role. Or, like I said, that fourth line center. You know, I mean, that's not a bad fourth line, right? If you have Harkins, Nash, and Gustafsson, I mean, obviously you have to have the cap space to be able to do it, which the Jets don't have. For people asking why not call him up and not have Nate Beaulieu is because the Jets don't have the cap room to do that right now. But yeah, I mean, David Gustafsson in terms of faceoffs, in terms of penalty kill, I really like you said it, Drew, you're not wrong. The NHL is a different animal than the AHL. But I think he's at a point, and again, I strongly encourage people to read the article that Jay Bell wrote in the Free Press. And like I said, it's linked in illegalcurve.com in the morning papers because it's good. And you hear from a guy like Nelson Noje who knows, you know, he's been a pro. He's been in the organization for what, like 7 or 8 years at this point now. And I think he was a 2014 draft pick. So he's been in the organization a long time. And, you know, he can see what David Gustafsson can bring to a team. So I think he's ready to make that jump. I think it's within his ability. I mean, right now, again, because of the cap room, they don't have that ability to bring him up in this moment. I mean, they could just have a chance. I mean, to be honest with you, if they put someone on waivers like Nate Beaulieu, I don't know that they're going to lose Nate Beaulieu. But at the same time, for the way that the team is consistent, you know, right now, they don't seem like they're inclined to do that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You talk about Vesalainen and you talk about Gustafsson, and we talked earlier with Mike and early in the hour number one about the penalty kill. And this is according to Murat yesterday. It was an optional skate for the Jets this morning. So you weren't really able to glean anything from this morning's skate, aside from the fact that just logically it's going to be 7 defensemen, 11 forwards, because I don't really think there's any other option. And that Hellebuck is, you know, he wasn't on the ice. It was an optional. But Comrie stayed out for extra work, so that should tell you that Hellebuck is going to get the start. Again, no surprise there. But if you look at the penalty killing units, You know, based on what Murat tweeted yesterday during practice, you know, the first unit, if you want to say the first penalty killing unit, was Adam Lowry and Dominic Toninato. Okay, fine. Makes a little bit of sense. You can understand that. It's the second penalty killing unit, the forwards, that were most interesting to me, because you're thinking, okay, going to be guys like maybe Harkins, maybe Riley Nash. No, it looks like it's Christian Veselainen and Svechnikov going over the board second as penalty killers. And that to me is particularly surprising, especially when you consider the second power play unit features Harkins and Nash. To me, and you know, far be it from me to criticize, it seems almost Svechnikov and Veselainen would be better off in a power playing situation, and Harkins and Nash would be better off in a penalty killing situation. Yet it's the other way around, according to practice yesterday, for the Winnipeg Jets. So that's something I'm going to be keeping an eye on today when the Jets, assuming that they're on the special teams at some point, you know, which forwards are they deploying? Because a Veselainen and Svechnikov penalty killing unit is something that I think will raise some eyebrows, especially if you're not using guys like Nash and Harkins in that same role.
Yeah, and we just talked about faceoffs. Neither of those guys are centers, so I'm not sure which one of them. I think Svechnikov, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he has played some center at the NHL and AHL levels. I don't believe Veselainen has played any center. Correct me if I'm wrong, but
I'm not entirely certain, Ezzy.
Yeah, so both of these guys are wingers, so that's what's probably the
neither most of them are guys you think of as taking faceoffs, no. Though certainly.
Well, I mean, you have it up there, Drew, still, I think, right? Like, have either of those guys taken a faceoff this year? I don't think they have. I mean, if they have, they haven't taken many faceoffs. So I think a factor, though, that you just mentioned, Drew, is neither of those guys are on the power play unit. So that, I think, maybe is a factor for Paul Maurice, right, Dave? That he wants these guys to get engaged in special teams. But I agree with you. I mean, look, I think Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp, even though they've struggled a little bit here, I mean, that's your bread and butter. Those are your bread and butter penalty killers, right? Like, those guys have been doing it for so long. Riley Nash obviously has been doing it, you know, for a long time in the NHL. And he's a good faceoff guy, like we just talked about. So Nash is a guy that you'd expect to be out there. And I agree with you. Like, Harkins is a guy that I think, especially when he's not getting the power play time, which he could get the second power play time tonight versus Nashville, I think he makes a lot of sense. But, you know, it's a work in progress, guys, right? Because even though Scheifele and Wheeler aren't guys that you expect to get a lot of penalty kill time, especially Scheifele, Wheeler got some, obviously, earlier on the California road trip. But you're trying out different things. And I agree with Mike McIntyre when he said they're trying to still figure out, you know, who is going to be the regular penalty killers. I think everyone expects, you know, Kopp and Lowry. And, you know, going back to the postgame show Thursday night, I kept talking about Nate Beaulieu in the press box with Dave, but I really thought he looked good. You know, we know that he's been blocking shots his entire NHL career, but for a guy that's only expected to play, you know, 6 to 10 minutes, I thought it was really an impressive, gutsy performance by Beaulieu. But yeah, Drew, we'll see how long that lasts. I don't think you're going to see Christian Veselainen as a penalty killer for very long. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Maurice makes some big in-game adjustments, you know, if the Jets do surrender a power play goal early in this game.
For the record, Svechnikov has taken 2 faceoffs so far this year, and he's got 50.
Well, it has to be Svechnikov, because Veselainen has definitely not taken. I mean, again, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't seen Veselainen take a faceoff with the Jets, and I wouldn't be surprised if he hasn't taken a lot of faceoffs with the Moose either.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a handful.
Yeah, it seems like, I don't know if the Jets or if Paul Maurice and Charlie Hedy are almost overcomplicating or have been overcomplicating the penalty kill all season long. Like, I go back to the usage of Wheeler and Stasny on the penalty kill. It just, I think you're just,
well, Stasny makes more sense than Wheeler.
I mean, sure. Stasny makes more sense than Wheeler,
because he's a center and he's a good, reliable defensive forward. Not that Wheeler is a bad defensive forward, but because you expect, we talked about it, you know, a few weeks back, 2 or 3 weeks back, or I forget. And we talked about the notion of, you know, the Jets not wanting to have their top power play unit out there for a minute 15, a minute 30. In that first game, we saw them out there for a minute 50, right? So especially when you have a lot of man advantage situations, right? Like, so if the Jets have, you know, 3 or 4, you know, power plays in a game, you don't want Wheeler out there. And then you're starting to get into the 22, 23, 24 minutes. And then he's going to be, you know, one of the most used forwards. And you just don't want to see that. Like, you're trying to keep Blake Wheeler fresh. Dave talked about that notion, right? Like, Blake Wheeler, this is not 29-year-old Blake Wheeler anymore. He's in great shape. Don't get me wrong. but you really have to be careful with how you use him. I think we've seen that, especially, you know, when you're talking about, you know, playing a lot on the power play. So I agree. I think there might be a little bit of overcomplicating the personnel that you're deploying. I think Riley Nash should be a staple of that second penalty kill unit all season long.
Well, that's just what I never really understood, you know, is, you know, what is his role on the team? You know, why, you know, when they signed him,
top power play.
When the Jets signed him in the offseason, most people said, okay, that's a worthwhile signing. He's got a skill set and an ability that works when you deploy him in X role. The problem is, and I'm forgetting about the power play situation because that's obviously just a result of the COVID situation. They're not deploying him in that situation, though. It's like, what role did you want Riley Nash to play if not be on your penalty killing unit? It's just odd to me. And I don't know if it's Maurice. I don't know if it's Maurice plus Huddy. But it just seems like they've decided to try and overcomplicate something unnecessarily. And as a result, the entire penalty killing unit has been, you know, behind the curve, pardon the pun, you know, for the first 4 or 5 games of the year, that they're now maybe that, you know, they tried to make things more difficult than necessary rather than going with what should work. And if it doesn't, then you make the adjustments.
Yeah, and no, Dave, I agree, Drew.
Before you get in here, sorry to cut you off there, Dave. I was going to say another guy that, you know, we should mention here that could factor in. I don't know if he'll factor in tonight. Mike McIntyre mentioned him. Dominic Toninato. Like, he's a guy that can also take faceoffs. So I think he's another guy, another option on the penalty kill. But go ahead, Dave.
Well, so Toninato came out.
I said Dave.
Yeah, I know. I'm just going to say that it's, you know, him and Lowry seem like they're the first two forwards over the boards based on practice yesterday on the penalty kills. So again, that'll be something worth watching, but I agree. He at least, you know, he's got that center ice experience that he can take a draw if necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fair point. I think there's question marks because you're not having success, right? So because of that, you have a lot of questions as to what you're trying to do. I think the Jets probably factor. I mean, it's interesting, right? Because if you're gonna try and tinker with something, you obviously won't try it in preseason. But the reality is that preseason is like AHL hockey; it's all chaos. There's the resemblance to NHL hockey in preseason, as we've discussed, you know, ad nauseum on the show, is minimal at best. So the truth is, it's hard to really feel like you've got something working when, you know, you might have your best unit up against, you know, Bakersfield Condors or, you know, Stockton Heat. Like, it's not exactly the same thing as playing the Flames or the Oilers, right? We know how good the Oilers power play is. So if they don't bring McDavid and they don't bring Dreisaitl and they don't bring you know, everybody else, you know, then the reality is, your PK could be, you know, 5 for 5 against them, but it won't mean much. So,
by the way, Dave, does Connor McDavid already have 14 points?
13, I think. 13.
13 still.
And he's at 13 points. He's on pace for like 256 points or something like that. It's like, you know, he's off to the best start through 5 games since some guy named Wayne Gretzky in like 86, 87 when Gretz had like 15 points through the first 5 games. So,
you know, Dreisaitl's got 11. Just, you know, pick your poison.
Well, hey, Messier always had a lot too. So I mean, there's always trailer to receive. But
so does that make Jesse Puljujärvi Esa Tikkanen then?
Well, seems
Zach Hyman can be Esa Tikkanen in that case.
Well, Zach Hyman's also doing very well. So you know, he's looked very good in Edmonton so far. The Oilers are off to a phenomenal start. Not that Jets fans from the 1.0 days are going to be happy about the old Smythe Division rivalry kicking back up, but I think look, there's lots of question marks. You lost all your pretty much your you know most of your penalty killers, right? You had Thompson, you had Lewis, you had Appleton, you had guys who you felt comfortable
even,
doing
even
that.
Derek Forbort, Dave. Forbort killed penalties.
And Forbort, yeah. I'm thinking more from a forward.
But you've got Brendan Dillon now, so.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, it's one of those situations where you've lost that's kind of from a Jets perspective, the biggest kind of change in personnel because your power play units, you know, obviously you lost Matty Perreault, who I thought was super effective on that second power play unit. But, you know, for the most part, you can replace what Perreault brought, you hope, because, like, you know, that's been the key for this Jets team is having someone go to the front of the net. And so, Yeah, Charles is saying Puljujärvi is a new Curry, as he not Tikkanen. So Hyman goes Tikkanen, and Puljujärvi will be the Curry. But yeah, no. So I think that there's interesting things that you want to try. But yeah, I mean, I don't know that you want. I understand that, you know, especially from keeping guys fresh, especially guys you're not using a lot, right? Like, so you want to get Vesalainen in the game, and he is changing his game a little bit, right? Like, to your point, Drew, what you said, the last game he tried to be a more, he's trying to be, bring a more physical element. And it was funny because you talked about, you know, him shooting a couple of times in the game, and that got, you know, a pretty big reaction in the press box because everybody's like, whoa, you know, Christian Vesalainen is finally taking a shot. Yeah. But he is, you know, I mean, the funny thing is, and I've said this before, like Christian Vesalainen, I remember him and Laine, I want to say it was a preseason, and they were like both top of the circle, just blast, 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 blast. So he's got a pretty good slap shot. And I think as he gets more comfortable and not deferring to guys, you know, and that's one element sometimes young guys, especially when they come up from the AHL and get to the NHL, they defer, right? And they say, okay, you know, even Cole Perfetti yesterday in the AHL had a perfect chance on a 2-on-1 and he tried to pass it off rather than take the shot. So sometimes guys will do that. They have that mentality of pass first rather than take the shot. And I think if Christian Vesalainen feels more comfortable, maybe gets more ice time, maybe this gets him going a little bit more. Who knows? I mean, and that could be something that Paul Maurice is trying. We'll let it, you know, experiment, marinate for a couple of games. And if it works and has success and it does something for the player, I mean, that's, like I said, Chris, they're asking Christian Vesalainen not to be what he is. They're trying to change him into something that they want him to be. So maybe that penalty killing role that we all kind of go, well, that's not really what you think of when you think of Christian Vesalainen. Well, it's not what we traditionally have thought with him, but the reality is that's what the Jets are trying to mold him into. So, and like I said earlier in my answer or one of my previous comments was, in the NHL, when you're there, you do whatever it is to stay there. So if they're asking him to mold his game and change his game and be different than what we traditionally expect, which is someone who can maybe score, well, then maybe that's what Christian Vesalainen is going to become for the Winnipeg Jets.
Let's take our second break of the morning. We're going to hear from Justin Bradford, host and editor-in-chief of Penalty Box Radio. He covers the Predators. That's coming up in a few minutes' time. When we come back, we'll look at what's happened in the Central Division this week. Much more on tonight's Jets and Predators game. Stick with us. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. It's Saturday morning. Going to welcome in Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio momentarily to talk about the Nashville Predators. Reminder, tonight, late night, not that late, not going to be as late as it's going to be next week on Tuesday and Thursday with those late, real late games on the West Coast. But after tonight's contest, it'll be the Illegal Curve post-game show. Come back, talk about what happens during tonight's Jets and Predators game with us. We got giveaways. We got bagels to give away. We got toques to give away. We got all sorts of fun and games ahead for you. So remember, set the reminder now. Ring, if you haven't yet, smash the like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and get notified each and every time we go live. Gentlemen, want to take a quick look at the Central Division so far through the first few games of the season, and it certainly is early. We know the Jets have been off to their relatively middling start with a 1-2-1 record. Nashville right behind them at 1-3. And then the surprise team, the Colorado Avalanche, they're off to a little bit of struggles as well with a 1-3 record so far. But nobody's been as bad as both the Blackhawks and the Coyotes. The Coyotes 0-3-1. They've given up 22 goals in their first four games. The Blackhawks 0-4-1. And they've given up 21 goals in their first five games. Is that I think everyone expected the Coyotes to be really bad this year. To me, the Blackhawks and their woeful defensive play is a more of a surprise to my perspective.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The biggest surprise, like for me personally too, is the way the Blues have started, because the Blues are that team that I think after they won the Stanley Cup, you thought, okay, you know, maybe they're going to repeat. And then, you know, after Alex Pietrangelo signed with the Golden Knights and then they brought in Torrey Krug, you're thinking, okay, Torrey Krug's a really good defenseman, but, you know, this Blues team isn't going to be as good now that they don't have their top defenseman. And obviously Vladimir Tarasenko's injury problems haven't helped their cause either, but they've scored 15. They've only played three games. They've scored 15 goals in five games. Jordan Kyrou has 7 points in those three games. He's no longer a rookie, I don't believe. This is his second full year. But so the Blues have been a big story for me. But there's no doubt, Drew, that the other, you know, big surprise is the way Colorado has started. And by the way, the Blues have defeated the Avalanche and the Golden Knights. They obviously defeated the Coyotes in there as well. So that helped point night. But, you know, the Blues have been a very good story so far this season.
Certainly the St. Louis Blues are off to a good start. Two teams that are off to some early season struggles are the Winnipeg Jets and the Nashville Predators. They'll do battle tonight in downtown Winnipeg. To talk about the tonight's game from the Predators' perspective, we welcome in Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. And Justin, there's something very apropos when the Illegal Curve Hockey Show meets Penalty Box Radio. I think it's, I believe that's called Synergy, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, it absolutely is, guys. Great to be back and happy to join you this morning.
Our pleasure to have you, and thanks for giving us your time, Justin. Obviously, you look at this Predators team, and we were talking about this in hour number one. We were sort of previewing tonight's contest. You know, you look at some of the names up front, and, you know, the names of Matt Duchene and the names of Ryan Johansson and the names of, you know, Ellie Tolvanen, and you think that those guys should be dynamic players offensively. Yet it just hasn't happened, and it doesn't happen with any level of consistency. You know, maybe not so much Tolvanen, but Johansson and Duchene. Is this just what we have to come to expect from them sort of on a night-in, night-out basis at this stage of their career, that you never know when they're going to be world beaters and you never know when they're going to be sort of absent from, you know, making any impact?
Yeah, I think you put it very, very well there, too. That's why everyone's really frustrated with the $8 million that Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene are both making, that if maybe they were $5.5 or $6 million guys, it wouldn't be as big of a deal. But when you're some of the highest paid guys on the roster, the expectations are obviously a lot higher for them, and they're not living up to that, and they haven't, and they know it. It's just they haven't done anything about that either. I mean, we see glimpses of things happen. You see Ryan Johansson, whenever he gets into his playoff mode or late in the season mode and knows he needs to make a push, yeah, he can dominate on puck control. He can dominate on passes and make it look like he's worth $8 million. And then other times it'll look like he's just not trying hard enough, even though he may be, and things aren't falling his way. Matt Duchene started off this season, I know it's very early in the season, but started off on fire and then all of a sudden just kind of disappears. So very streaky players for those two. And for $8 million guys, they cannot afford to be streaky. And that's where it has this organization right now in kind of a pinch, that if they want to consider this a competitive rebuild, those guys need to compete. But if they're going to be in a real rebuild, you can't have two $8 million centers that are taking up your top line like that. So it's a very unique position this Nashville Predators team is in, and that I think the next couple months are going to be very telling in terms of the direction this team is going to go and where the fan base expects this team to go, and if management is going to listen to that as well.
Justin, we're based in Winnipeg, so we pretty much have to ask you about Cody Glass. I also have to ask you about Glass because I took him in the hockey pool that I'm in. So Glass played two games for the Predators, but then earlier this week, he was reassigned to the Milwaukee Admirals. And obviously John Hines, you know, said this, you know, when he was asked about Glass, he said he just wants him to play top line minutes, work on his game, and then he'll be back up with the Predators. Is this how you kind of view it? Do you see, you know, Glass not being in the AHL for long, or what are your kind of impressions about, you know, how Glass is going to fit in to this Predators team, or has fit into this team? Because he obviously, you know, was the big acquisition from Vegas in the, you know, Ryan Ellis, Nolan Patrick trade.
Yeah, this has been curious. So Cody Glass sent down Philippe Myers, also has been scratched the past couple of games, who's another acquisition in that. And everybody's kind of going, So you send Glass down, Myers is scratched. What is going on with these acquisitions that's been having here? Cody Glass in the offseason even was obviously relieved to not have to deal with the pressure of being in Vegas and everything too, and being the first pick and all that stuff. But with Cody Glass, I'm frustrated with prospect management with the organization. It's been frustrating a lot of folks too, because it's one of those things. Yeah, he get top line minutes in Milwaukee, and I hope he's not there for that long. But at some point in time, you've got to let these prospects get thrown to the wolves and get that experience. They're not going to get this experience anyway else aside from being thrown out there to the fire and saying, hey, the team's depending on you. Go out there and see what you're made of. And that's how the sink or swim has to happen at some point in time. I don't think they're necessarily at that point, but that's what I prefer to see. And I think it's because they're still scared to lose games and scared to not make the playoffs and that type of thing. And they can't be that way. You have to let these prospects and these young kids go out and play and get that experience. For instance, we're seeing this in the game against the Rangers that the Predators lost. They had the top line out there for basically the last 2 minutes of the game instead of putting your young guys out there, like a Philip Tomasino, like an Ellie Tolvanen, things like that. That's where I would have liked to have seen them out there, how they respond to those pressures. Cody Glass, I'd love to see him out there on the power play in those waning minutes of a game. Give him that experience, because if they lose, okay, they know what it's like to be in that situation. Go out and reset that the next time. Yeah, it's great he can get some top line minutes in Milwaukee, but he's at this point in his career too. He has to be in the NHL to see what he's really worth and how he's going to mesh. And you cannot build chemistry with young prospects if they're keep switching up the lines they're in and setting them down all the time only a couple games into the season.
Justin Bradford is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Justin covers the Nashville Predators for Penalty Box Radio. Does a great job all about the Preds.
Justin, since 2008-09 season, you know, when we think of the Nashville Predators, we think of Pekka Rene. So what's it like, you know, without their number one tender for all these years in the lineup on a daily basis?
It's been a little different. Granted, the past couple seasons have been, you could tell, a transition because the backup, Yusuf Saros, has been getting starts at home, when before it would be very rare to have the backup get a start at home. So it's been one of those things of transition to always hear number 74, Yusuf Saros, be announced instead of 35, Pekka Rinne, and you can just feel a little bit of a different energy. So you know there's still that waning overhang of no more Pekka in there as well. But it's been the kind of good transition because Pekka Rinne got to have Yusuf Saros under his wing for multiple years. It wasn't like a quick transition. I wish Rinne could have gone out in a little bit bigger of a bang, just in terms of everything he was able to accomplish in his career. But it's been a big time change for this organization too. When you have a guy that's, you don't see that in the league all that often. There's very few goaltenders that play their entire time within one organization, right? I mean, Henrik Lundqvist, I mean, that was weird to see him go to Washington. I mean, it's weird. We saw a Capitals Lundqvist jersey at the Rangers game on Thursday. Right. It's like, what is this? So it's been interesting to see how this team is adjusting to that. I think they're doing well overall, but we saw that 75-25, 60-40, 50-50, and then all of a sudden the flip to Saros basically being the main starter as well. So it's been an equal transition, which I think has helped, and not something that just smacks him across the face of, by the way, he's gone, good luck. So that's what I think has helped this team in transition, that they had to learn how to play in front of Yusuf Saros and what he is capable of. And he's very capable. He proved that last season that he's capable of being a good goaltender, even without the strongest team in front of him. He can at least still keep his team in games. And that's all you can really want out of a goaltender going through a competitive rebuild, is to give you a chance to win some games. but it definitely has been different. And I think everybody's just waiting for that announcement now of, hey, when are they going to retire Pekka Rinne's jersey? They'll be the first one for the Nashville Predators, and it's got to come sometime, but I think people want it faster than it needs to. Let it breathe a little bit. Let the retirement breathe a little bit to make it the moment mean even more.
So, Justin, you put in quotes competitive rebuild, and I think that almost speaks for itself. Is that sort of your way, and maybe the fan base's way, of saying that nobody's buying it, that, you know, the competitive part of the rebuild may not be there? And if it's not, you know, given some of the bad contracts that are on the books, because, you know, it's clear that Duchesne and Johansson aren't playing up to their value in terms of what they're worth, how do the Predators sort of accelerate the rebuild, or truly make the competitive rebuild more competitive in this sort of awkward phase that they're in?
Yeah, it's definitely an awkward phase. And I think it's denial from management, that had they embraced a rebuild and made a couple more trades. I mean, they did Ryan Ellis, Victor Arvidsson. I mean, they did a couple things there, but it's still not getting rid of those $8 million contracts that gives you more space in the salary cap, or something that acquires a few more draft picks. I mean, they've been restocking the cupboard finally after trading away so many first round and second round picks. They finally have some prospects, and Milwaukee is looking pretty good and competitive, like they have been in the recent years, by having some good prospects. But they've got to embrace it and dump some of those contracts and embrace playing young players. Embrace that you're going to be bad for a little bit, but it's bad for the sake of they're getting experience. It's not bad as in you just have bad players. It's bad because they're really young. Now, I'd prefer them to embrace that, because, hey, if they're getting chemistry together, they're playing together really well over a period of time, they develop that chemistry, then in 2 or 3 years, then you say, okay, you know what, let's add a couple free agents. Let's see what we have here. Let's make another run again. But I think a lot of it has to do with ticket sales. that it's going to be tough to sell tickets, especially with the pandemic still going on and restrictions at the arena, with the Titans doing really well, with Nashville SC, the MLS team doing really well. There's a lot of competition for people's dollars in Nashville, too. They can't really afford to be that horrible, but this team has never been bad enough to get a really good draft pick aside from Seth Jones, and even then, it wasn't a top three pick. So they've never been that awful to where they've just missed the playoffs, barely, or they've just made the playoffs to where they don't qualify for getting a top pick. If this team and the organization could embrace being bad for the sake of the future of the organization to get some top picks, and not saying tank, but just say play the young guys, see what you have, and if you end up being really bad, then you gain some good draft picks, then in 3 or 4 years, they could be really, really good and competing for a Stanley Cup again, potentially, because they do have some goaltenders in the wings. They have Saros, they have Askarov over in the KHL. They have some good prospects that could make this team competitive, but the organization just will not embrace that yet. They want to put a stamper on competitive rebuild, make it competitive. There's just no reason to do that now with the way the salary cap is laying out for them with those contracts.
Yeah, and Justin, I bet Predators fans aren't going to get sick of hearing competitive rebuild, right? They're gonna love hearing that all year long for a team that's been in the playoffs year after year after year. Wanted to ask you about Phil Thomas. You know, we talked about him earlier. You know, going back to that 2019 draft, I remember when Dave M was doing a preview of who the Jets might take at 19th overall. Thomasina was a guy that we thought might be an option for the Jets. And correct me if I'm wrong. Thomasina was 24th overall and Heinola was 19th or 20th overall. So very close in that 2019 NHL draft. And what I wanted to ask you is just kind of what your impressions have been with Thomasina in, his first full-time NHL season. I saw his first career NHL goal. It was a really nice bank for those who haven't seen it, right? From the goal line off of, Shesterkin? It was Shesterkin. So it was a nice way to score your first NHL goal. And, as a second kind of part of that question, you mentioned Yaroslav Askarov, and he's obviously, going to be a very good NHL goalie one day. And then you've got, Fedor Svechkov, I believe, was the pick from last year. So are Predators kind of taking solace in the fact that, you do see, really good young players, coming down, the pike, and especially with Thomasino now in the NHL for his first full-time season?
Yeah, I think this is one of the first times, and been covering the Preds now for 9 years, that I've seen a lot more fans excited about prospects. It takes a certain breed of hockey fan, right, to really get excited about prospects when there's so much other stuff that your brain has to comprehend in any sports fan. But to get excited about prospects, especially ones that are not even playing in North America. I have one friend, he's learning Russian, just so we can keep track of all the Russian prospects now in the KHL for the Preds, because they probably
decided. That's dedication.
It is. After, Alexander Radulov's situation way back when they're like, nope, no more Russians. All of a sudden the Predators are like, hey, we'll take them all.
So bring back, don't forget about Kuznetsov, Justin.
Yeah, the Kuznetsovs need to come back. Boy.
Now see, that rubs the wrong way with Predators fans right there when you think about what happened in Arizona with the Kuznetsovs and Radulov. But Philip Thomasino, it's been fun to see him develop, and I think if anything, him having the opportunity to play in the AHL with the O not playing last season helped him so much to get used to playing the adult game, the adult pro game. And he had a really good year with the Chicago Wolves, because for those that don't know, the Milwaukee Admirals did not play last season. So it was the Carolina prospects and the National Predators prospects playing for the Chicago Wolves last season combined. And so he had a very good year with them. So it was not the make or break year, but it was, hey, there's a roster spot for here. Go out there and earn it. And he earned it. And so he played, and then he got scratched. And then people were going, what are you doing? He gets scratched, and then he goes and plays a game, and he scores his first NHL goal. So it makes them look like geniuses for scratching him to revitalize him. But still, you play the kid. That's what you have to do, is you play him, and that should have earned him no more scratches, unless there's a horrible mistake where he needs to learn. No more scratches. He has to learn by way of being thrown to the fire, and he's looked overall good. Yeah, he's had his rookie moments. Not going to wash over that. He's had some bad reads or bad defensive reads, things like that. But overall, he's had some tremendous passes as well, some good vision. He's been able to cover some for some guys as well, too. But his goal, what I liked about his first goal was that it was an actual goal and not, oh, it was tipped in off someone. Oh, it went off his jersey or went off his butt. It was, he scored, it was a skill goal where he saw the opportunity to bank it in off the goalie and pop it in. And that's a great confidence builder too, to get a goal like that. That takes a little bit of skill where you're going to pop that shot. And hey, we all know good things happen when you put it on net, even if you're behind the net. So that's what I want to see out of these prospects too, is them getting ice time, them getting opportunities. Tomasino, that was another thing that I went on before. He's got to be on the power play too. If you want prospects to succeed, put him in positions to succeed as well, instead of a guy like Nick Cousins. What is he doing on a power play unit when you have a Philip Tomasino sitting right there too? And he's one of those guys that actually people in the league will talk about, is Philip Tomasino, because there's excitement surrounding him because of what he was able to accomplish playing in the O. So go out, put him out there, put him in position to succeed, and things will happen. He's going to learn. He's going to learn very well.
You know, Justin, you talk about Russians, and one player when he would come to Winnipeg with to play the Moose on Milwaukee was Yakov Trenin, and he's not huge at 6'2", but he's a big boy, and he does a lot of damage. How has his transition been so far to the NHL?
I like it. It's been rough for him because he's had about 2 years of injuries, where it'd be so close and you're thinking, he's going to be the next call up, and all of a sudden injured for 4 weeks. You're like, you've got to be kidding me. So I'm glad he's finally earned a full-time NHL spot, because there was a time too, and he was getting scratched a lot too. We're going, play Trenin, please. Because he skates like a tank. It is very curious how he uses, even though he's not a big dude, but he skates like a big dude with his shoulders forward, and he's willing to play the body. He's willing to mix it up a little bit. He's always in the mix, but he has an offensive upside. And that's what I like about him too, is that he's willing to be difficult to play against, but you'll see him coming in on the breakaway, or you'll see him cheating up a little bit to make sure he's getting a good offensive opportunity. So I like what his transition's been. It's been a little bit slower, but he's earned it. And for a fourth liner, he's doing well, because he played in the second line last game, part of that blender that John Hines has going. So he's one of those guys that I think is going to be a solid third liner for his NHL career. And that's not a bad thing at all. We all know that it's good to have guys that know their position, can play solid, pop in some goals, be physical. And this Predators team has been trying to get more difficult to play against, and he's part of that. He's a drafted player too, which is great that you don't have to go out and find it outside your organization to get someone that's difficult to play against, that is willing to be physical. He doesn't necessarily take too many penalties, but I mean, if people haven't seen it, he dropped the gloves with Zdeno Chara, and that was one of those ones where people were going, whoa, what are you doing? Oh, what are you doing? kind of moments. So it was interesting to see that. He's willing to do that, but I like that he has an offensive upside. That's basically the key there, is that he's not just going to be another scrub out there, that he actually has some speed. He has some tenacity. He can play in the penalty kill as well. He can provide some extra things aside from just being physical.
Justin, final question for you. You know, you mentioned, you know, competitive rebuild. Predators, you know, the first four games of the season were all at home, not off to a great start this year. When they're successful, what does the Predators game look like? You know, what's the identity that John Hines wants to coach in this team that he can point to and say, yes, that is how our game needs to look for us to be successful?
That's a good question. I'm still trying to figure that out. it's been interesting because when you think about it, and this is getting very literal, Peter Laviolette was still coaching his team last calendar year. Mm-hmm. It's crazy that it's been the way it's been, but John Hines, this is his first training camp, his first actual training camp. He came in right basically after the Winter Classic, and then the pandemic hit, and then they had the return to play, and then he had a big break, and then you had a shortened training camp, and then a season happened where it wasn't a true training camp where you had prospects in to see what, you know, what could happen, things like that, people battling for positions. So this was his first training camp. So I think now is when he's trying to establish a true identity, because he didn't feel as rushed. I think the identity is be difficult to play against, try to score some timely goals. That's all you can hope for right now. With this team is such a mishmash of differences out there too, and frustration, that people are trying to ask, what is the identity of this team? Because not many of us know. We really don't know. Speaking of, they pull the goalie against the Rangers on Thursday. It's 6-on-5. They dump and chase. What are you doing? What is that the identity of this team when you have two $8 million forwards, a $6 million forward, your Roman Josi out there, and you're dumping and chasing, when you should be able to skate the puck in and maintain possession? That's an identity problem right there, that if you don't feel confident enough to skate the puck in when you have a 6-on-5 and you just dump it in, then you have an identity crisis. And I think they're still going through that, even though they feel like they've identified themselves a little better. They want to be difficult to play against, but are they? In some matters, sometimes they are. Depends on who's out there and who they're playing against. But overall, no, because we look at their record. They're going to be that kind of team that is streaky. They're going to go on 3 or 4 game losing streaks, and they're going to pop some things together and win 3 or 4 games in a row. People get overly positive, and then bam, a losing streak's going to hit again. When you have young players like that, that's just what's going to happen. So I think this is the find the identity year. If they're going to be truly rebuilding, if they're going to try to be competitive or not. So I know that's not necessarily a full answer to your question, but I think it's because we don't know yet. They're still trying to figure that out because of all the changes that have happened.
It's certainly an appropriate answer and an honest answer, and that's all we can ever ask. Justin Bradford covers the Nashville Predators for Penalty Box Radio, does a great job down in Smashville, so we encourage you to check him out down there. Justin, thanks so much this morning. Enjoy tonight's contest. We'll do it again real soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks,
Justin Bradford joining the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from Penalty Box Radio. Very apropos. Let's take our final break. When we come back, maybe we'll hear from Jets head coach Paul Maurice, do some final thoughts before we get you set for tonight's contest between the Jets and the Predators. Stick with us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. We're back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg joining us. Big thank you to Justin Bradford. Big thank you to Mike McIntyre for joining us earlier in the program. Always appreciate both of their insights into the Jets and the Predators, respectively.
Jets love the Saturday night game. Love it. Love the early Saturday night game. Love doing a show when we have a game. I mean, makes me go back to the excitement we used to feel back in the 1290 days. So I'm absolutely loving it.
There you go. As he's pumped for tonight's contest between the Jets and the Predators, let's hear from Jets head coach Paul Maurice. This is from earlier this morning after the Winnipeg Jets game day skate.
Light without Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. Is there anything you can tell us as far as like what the long-term situation might be for your club and when we might see these guys on the road?
I don't think there is. I think almost the best way to think about it, it's almost like concussion protocol, right? A bunch of steps have to get passed before you get back on the ice and can't really update those. You just kind of wait until they hit the mile marker. So you don't know. I mean, they can be back playing 22 minutes the first day that they're available, or I don't know the answer to that. So it's kind of like that same idea. They'll be in the lineup when the doctors tell me they can be in the lineup, and I'll assume they're ready to go.
You talk about the pairing of DeMello and Logan Stanley, what you've liked, in particular the younger fellow, but I mean the duo as
yeah. What we're hoping for, and it's not on goals, obviously, but Logan Stanley's in his first year last year, and I think he scored 2 goals in his last game. You hope that he comes back with that as a starting point, a jump off point. All the good things. So he made huge progress. So he was even kind of in and out of the lineup in the last month and a half of the season. There were times where Logan came out, but his game now is not only where he started, it's ahead of it for me, where he finished rather. His feet have made just huge progress. Now he's a big man that can move and he can make plays. So he and Dylan have a real good chemistry there together. I'm very, very pleased with Logan's start. I think he's been consistent and strong.
Next to Kelly Moore from 680 CGOB. Go ahead, Kelly.
Thanks, Gregor. Good morning, Paul. With a guy like Juuse Saros, is it almost like when you're facing Gibson that you have to get one by him early just so that he doesn't get into that groove and throw up a brick wall on you?
I think with both of those guys, and they do, right? They get really hot in games. They just can't see an awful lot of the pucks that are coming to them early in the game. And we have to have traffic and you have to have screens, whether they're moving or they're stationary. You've got to get in their sight lines because they do. They feed off that. They get into they see the pucks early that you're sending to them. You're kind of building confidence in a goalie you can struggle with when they get on that roll.
Go back to Kelly Moore. Go ahead, Kelly.
And Paul, with the lines constructed as they are right now with Mark and Blake out of there, how much matching, because you have the home ice advantage again tonight, does it even come into play right now, or is it just roll three lines and then spot Dominic and Riley when you get a chance?
Well, I mean, there's not as much for sure, Kelly. And when you get to those 11 forwards, managing their ice time is a really important factor as the game goes on, so that you don't get running somebody real hot. Like you saw Andrew Kopp at about 15 minutes through two periods. A big chunk of that is he spent the entire 2 minutes killing a penalty toward the end of the period, but a mindful more of minutes. So it takes you out of it a little bit, but at home, for sure, you get to pick zone starts quite a bit more. You're more mindful of who's hot on the faceoffs. To put a line out, but really good training ground for everybody, because you don't get lines too much into roles, and you want them to recognize when the other team's best is on the ice, and you want them to develop that understanding that your game changes, your risk profile changes depending on who you're on the ice with. You need to be aware of it. So there's some good things that come out of it too. I think you by the end of the game, you've got 11 forwards. Certainly those top nine all feel like they got enough rhythm and they got enough ice time. I like it up front on certain nights. It's a little bit more difficult to manage on the blue line, keeping everybody in. But with Nathan and his involvement in our penalty kill, and we really liked what he did, Charlie will get into a rhythm with those guys as well.
Go next to Ken Weaver from Sportsnet. Go ahead, Weaver.
Thanks, Gregor. Morning, Paul. Speaking of the other team's best, what kind of challenges does Roman Josi provide for your group?
Well, just you can't. You have a plan, and then he changes direction on you. Right? So evasive. Such an incredible skater, powerful skater. He's an amazing athlete. Always appreciated what he could do, and then you spend some time at the World Cup with him. And he is an absolute game breaker from the back end. So you can run your angles the way you want to run them, and you can make sure you stay above them, and you certainly want to finish all the checks that you can on that. But he's been doing this for an awfully long time, and he's just incredibly dynamic. So you've got four forwards in the offensive zone the entire time because he reads the game that way, but he skates so well. You're not getting a lot of odd man breaks because of that. You know, you're not just being patient with him, and then he's going to cheat the game. He doesn't. He's able to get in, be aggressive, and be dynamic offensively, and then use his skating to cover off all of that.
Go back to Ken Weave. Go ahead, Weaver.
Well, obviously the schedule is lined up well to lean on Connor heavily, but can you share it all when you might want to get a start for Eric Comrie?
Yeah, probably not. I've got two games circled right now. The first one is more of an optional in my mind, and the second one is a hard start. He's going to play in one or two of the next handful.
There he goes. Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice saying that he's going to, at some point in time, start Eric Comrie. He's got a hard start and a start for the Winnipeg Jets goaltender. So we will find out over the course of the next few games as to when that is going to be and when you're going to see the Winnipeg Jets backup goaltender, who has certainly been in the spotlight all offseason. And, you know, a lot of talk about the backup goaltender position, probably more talk than is necessary about a guy who's going to play maybe 10 to 12 games all season long. But, you know, everybody's favorite guy is usually the backup quarterback or the backup goaltender, as the case may be. Gentlemen, final thought from each of you before we wrap it up on this Saturday morning.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, looking forward to that early puck drop. Love the Saturday night game. But before we go, got to wish a big happy birthday to our boy, Richie P. He's turning 30 years old tomorrow. Obviously has been a big part of IC since its inception. So I want to give a big birthday shout out to Richie, primarily because I forgot his birthday last year.
And he has not forgotten.
That's not the first time you forgot someone's birthday.
Yeah, you forgot Dave M's birthday. You forgot my birthday. Aside from that, you're doing great on the birthday front there, big boy. Dave, final thought to you?
Yeah, I just want to thank everyone for joining us in the show this morning. And make sure you smash that like button because, you know, that helps us with our algorithm. So we always appreciate when people do that. And stay tuned. We got tons of Moose content to come. Moose played, obviously, last night. Lots of, I tweeted out, 10 of the 20 players on the ice were Jets draft picks. So there's a lot of excitement. We'll have more Moose tickets for next week's game when they take on Iowa Wild, but they'll be back in action tomorrow afternoon in a rematch against the Griffins. And then, they play Iowa. We'll have four tickets for that, one of those two Iowa games. So I'll be giving those away during one of the Jets games, probably after a post-game show. So stay tuned for that. Smash that like button and make sure you're a subscriber, because the only people who can win are subscribers. So if you're a subscriber to the Illegal Curve Hockey Channel, that helps you win prizes. And of course, like Ezzy, I think, do you have to give away something now?
We're only giving the post-game. Tough Duck 2 giveaway.
So stay tuned.
Exactly. Lots more to come. We got giveaways tonight. We got bagels. We got toques. Dave M's going to do some other fun things. So stick with us. We'll be back later tonight after the Jets and the Predators, right around 8:45, 8:50 p.m. tonight. You can tune into the Illegal Curve post-game show. Big thank you to all of our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, Bagelsmith, Tough Duck, and of course, our good friends at Seagram. Support these fine businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Until later tonight, for Dave M, for Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel. We'll talk about the Bombers tonight, too. They're playing at 6 o'clock, same time as the Jets. So it'll be an exciting post-game show. We'll see you later on tonight, right around 8:45, 8:50. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.